Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is the LA Steel Show. And tonight we have George Dixon who will be joining us pretty soon. And, of course, Lila is with us.
I'm right here.
And we are going to talk about the Mayan calendar tonight. We're going to kind of deal with that again. We want to, what we want to do is talk specifically, if we can, with George about the...
I think he's right there.
Yeah. Talk specifically about 2012 and what to expect at that time.
Yeah, so that'll be...
I lost my chat room here.
I just put George on.
Okay. Hello, guys.
How
Hello.
Are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Well, I got... Go ahead.
I was about to ask you how your weather's, how the weather's doing there.
Cold. Very cold.
It's very cold.
Very
no nice. Snow yet. Tomorrow.
So,
excuse me.
Yeah, so anyway, George, tonight I thought we would, I mentioned before too, but I thought we would talk specifically about 2012.
Okay.
And what we can expect, what we should expect, to happen around that time and what the predictions are and what should we how should we try to react through that period what should we be what should we do between now and then to prepare ourselves and our minds for this extraordinary period of time.
Now in 2012, George, if I understand, the Mayan calendar just simply ends.
That's correct. The time cycle ends.
What's that?
The time cycle ends.
Time cycle ends, right. So what can we expect at that point to happen?
Well, I think 2012 will be the ending or everything winding down, to a single point again. And what's winding down is, I think, the polarity of logic and a polarity of our way of life. Is coming to an end. When I say our way of life, our way of thinking and acting upon consciousness.
So,
you know, there's a lot that's been written about these times, and we could say 2012. There was a special on the History Channel the last couple of weeks.
Oh,
and
really?
They talked about some the pictures Nostradamus painted, and basically they were a symbolism, and they were trying to interpret what he was interpreting and how he's seen it, and supposedly there was a few more predictions that he made back then that are happening now, you know, including the war with Iraq, and you know the things that are happening in this time.
I know that a lot of his predictions were 1999. I recall, 99 was a big year for him.
Uh huh.
When he predicted a lot of the end of the millennium, end of the world, kind of things. But did he specifically state any dates like 2012, or were they mostly? Because I know he had stated 1999 was a big one in his prophecies. And it just interesting that was also the same time that we entered the ethics period or changed the cycle in the Mayan calendar there.
No, Nostradamus was an astrologer, among anything else. And his prophecies were made on calibrating the stars. So, you know, he is, it's not this something that he used. But it was a rational way of thinking.
Okay.
So what do you think his how did they interpret his 2012?
Well, interpreting, I think some of the pictures that they've shown had to do with the weather patterns that we've been going through, how things are going to change, and things have changed, and these were just part of the predictions that he was making. But he was also using astrology in the alignment with not only our solar system, but alignment with the the Milky Way and the our galactic center.
So what is it that he said is going to happen in 2012?
Well, what we're going... Well, you know, it's how you can interpret this, because he's talking about an experience, and the experience has to play be played out. Whatever was fed into that experience, or that prophecy, if you'd want to call it that, that has to find a way of ending.
So does he look at the end, is his interpreted as the end of the planet, or end of life as we know it, or what?
Well, I think he talks about life going on after that, but it's going to be a struggle.
In what way?
Well, you know, I think he's pulling from the events of what happens when the magnetics of the Earth, they lessen, and they'll also affects our memory and our thinking and our capacity to think.
Does he talk about at all about the blue star?
The blue star?
Yeah.
I'm not. I really don't know, Leo, for sure on that.
I wonder because I.
What do you mean about the magnetics and our capacity to think, George?
Well, that is one aspect. I talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when we had the last great cataclysm,
right?
Which was 9772, where the Earth actually stopped, and then it rotated in the opposite direction.
Right.
And what was disrupted was the magnetic fields around the Earth. And I've described this as like a hard drive on a computer. Once you take the magnetics out of there, or you disrupt the magnetics, you disrupt the whole structure itself. It's like erasing a computer, erasing a hard drive.
Oh, boy.
That basically is what we went through at this last catastrophe, where basically all our knowledge was erased. Everything that we knew, we just lost that. And the only thing that helped us survive was the physical body itself. The physical body is three dimension, and the body will maintain survival. And at that point, that's actually what it did. We became cave people again, a caveman. And it wasn't until about 1,500 to 2,000 years after that point where people stopped eating people. In fact, I believe the Egyptians were part of that inhibited or shined against, you know, cannibalism. But what it was is we had to learn all over again. And
I remember in the Emerald Tablets, Thoth speaks about his coming to the planet that the people were cave people. They were living in caves and they were cave.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And he brought knowledge to them. And then of course carried down through the ages, where he came back many, many different times. But that
mm-hmm.
was specifically, I remember him saying that was his that was what he came back for.
Yes, yes.
Because people the Earth had lost its memory. It lost everything, and they were still living in caves, and they were cannibals.
Well, you know, it didn't last long, this magnetic disruption, if you'd want to call it that, but it did create havoc.
Yeah.
And what it did, it just took us time to learn how to live, besides just a basic instinct structure of survival. And Thoth was good an aspect, because what happened is that spiritual beings, we lost our contact with the outside world. And the only way we can experience the outside world is by touching and building up memory. Make a long story short, Toth was able to give us reading and writing. So it was his task that gave us the ability to learn how to read. And then from reading, we were able to acquire knowledge. But that was the only way it was just one of those ways that what we did do is we were able to get in touch with the outside world and learn for ourselves with personal knowledge. And this is something external, not internal. See, before this, we were basically beings connected to the emotional fields or the magnetic fields around us. And the mind was just a tool to use, not only to give operations and instructions to the body itself for survival. I'm just traveling on here, Leo. If you want to break in, do you have any questions?
Yeah, no, I was curious because I, you know, Toth was basically, he was more or less an Egyptian creation there. That it came from that period. He was a Lantherian, but he was known to the Egyptians as Toth. Is that correct? And then
right. Yes. The Greeks, you had Hermes and so forth, and you had other deities. Basically,
Hermes. But Toth was also Hermes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so on. And he states in there that he kept coming back every so many thousands of years or so, and to teach or to bring
knowledge.
More knowledge to people. So is that essentially those people? Were they those periods? Were they timed in the sense that every millennium? People were ready for a new, for a new jolt of Toth,
Well, he is part of a group of ascended masters who have been on this planet for probably millions and millions of years, and yet they're the overseers, I think, our understanding of this illusional reality that we put ourselves into. And along the ways, they give guidance and so forth. And understanding this is just part of evolution on a spiritual scale. What separates us is just the level of the dimensional reality that we position ourselves. But also, in that reality, we have 12 different overtones or 12 different understandings of that aspect. So, in a sense, we are third-dimensional beings going to fourth-dimensional, but these boys are up around the sixth or the seventh dimension.
Oh, boy.
And, they'll evolve to a point where, they wouldn't even come back, let's say this level.
Right.
And just like ourselves, we're sentinel beings that are not just third dimension. We're fifth dimensional beings, and right now we're going through that third to fourth dimensional express, and that express is coming to an end in 2012. Means that we're going to jump to another octave, this third dimensional reality that we have here. We'll continue on with people who are basically on that same level that, let's say, come in, to experience this as a, an educational experience. But we're moving on in a sense. And part of that is moving into higher dimensions where our religions teach salvation and ascension and so forth. That ascending basically into a different level of vibration, and yet having the ability to control and manipulate and go from one type of of existence to another without losing consciousness.
Well, in the Agni Yoga series that I do on Thursday nights,
yes,
we've been talking about that when they spoke about the brotherhood, they speak about this dimensional aspect too, but more so in the they talk about where they are as a and the ascended masters, and that they are here, but they're not dwelling on the earth because the atmosphere, they stated, isn't conducive for them, and they have to be in it. But then they have to be in this other dimension, which is, I believe, the fourth dimension or beyond. And
well, Leo, I would say let's bump this up a dimension,
right,
instead of let's bump this up to dimension. Understand that these ascended masters, over a period of time, now there are natural energy grids around the earth, and I'm talking about these.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they take different shapes and different forms, or they have certain synchronicities within the energy fields that crisscross, and they do have a pattern. What the pattern has been was a dodecahedron. So the earth was really encompassed into a dodecahedral type of sphere, linear sphere.
So
what these ascended masters have been able to do, and with the help of, let's say, our consciousness, in the sense of what we think and so forth, it goes into a galactic memory or Akashic record, if you'd want to call it that.
Okay.
We are at a point where our consciousness now is able to shift gears and evolve naturally into a different type of configuration, and that's an icosahedron, which means that the energy flows around the earth are going to change, and part of that change is being experienced, I think, in these weather patterns, but also the magnetics of the earth itself, the inner earth I'm talking about. So part of what these big boys, if you'd want to call them that, these spiritual advisors help do, is to make sure that the energy grids are positioned properly and they're functioning as they should. And understand that this icosahedra type of energy grid is incorporated, I think, in a Christo consciousness, and it basically emanates from the heart itself, from the emotional body. So what we're doing is we're going through an evolutionary change, not only our consciousness but the earth itself. Is changing.
Hmm. So everything will experience a change, not just us.
Yes. Well, I think it's the rate of growth, and I'm talking about the growth in the last 100 years. It's astronomical. We have had more happen in the last 100 years. Than any other time in history.
Well, I think the last 50 years...
Good and bad.
The last 50 years have been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly technically.
Well,
George, what I wanted to tell you, and you were talking about these fault lines and so on.
Yes.
Of the grid. And I was going back to the Emerald Tablets and going back to Toth's talk about the Halls of Amenti.
Yes.
And in the Halls of Amenti are the lords of the are where they're buried. They're not. I don't know if they're buried really, but they are where they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're rather entombed there. All right. Ready to be recalled. Okay. If I recall that.
Well, also under the Great Pyramid, there are chambers where you have these ascended masters, or priest, if you'd want to call it that, where they have a body and they keep it on a slab just for safekeeping. And every 300 or 400 years that they need to, if they need a body, they'll go and get the body, and then they'll intermingle with the populace and do what he has to do, and when he's done, his body reverts back to its initial state. But, you know, it's just having a vehicle or a body to use when needed.
Well, boy, we sure could use their help now on the planet, don't you think?
Well, I think they have, but over the years they have helped. Like, if you take a look at our evolution, let's say for the last 5,000 years, it's like a stair-step evolution where it wasn't something that evolved, but it was something that we learned. And it's like learning one thing, then learning another thing, but it wasn't something that evolved from one to the other. And understanding the Brotherhood were able to come in, let's say, and explain to us the principles of hydroelectricity or just basic mechanical apparatuses. And, you know, it's part of, part of what we were able to perceive and to concentrate and to actually produce, that we did it. And understanding how time has sped up since the 1700s, we took another revolution where we were able to take things or dream of something and actually make it, manufacture it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are at that point where we can co-create anything with this computer and holographically, and the only thing that is missing, I think, is the physical substance. But, you know, when it comes to particle beams and lasers and so forth, you know, we have so much of this technology, even as technology you see in sci-fi movies. You understand that, you know, if if it's duplicated there, it's duplicated in other places also. But along with that, you have the collective consciousness of keeping it alive, but also a building upon it.
Yeah.
It's artificial.
So many of the things that we've developed or that have been given to us have made our lives so much easier in lots of ways and more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But also, some of that knowledge has been used not for the good of man at all.
That's right. That's right. And understanding the Mayan fit, the fifth day and the fifth night is, I think, a mirrored understanding of the polarity view that we have of the world. Good or bad, bad or good, and it's not either or. They're both of equal value and strength in their own category. So just because you may take the right side instead of the left side doesn't mean the left side is bad. Understand it for its principle only, and that was part of the experience of the fifth day and night cycle. You had the good and you had the bad. Just like in the fifth day we developed nanotechnology, or, geez, microchips, so a whole 660,000 bits of information, smaller than a blood cell.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is not something that's fantasized. This is something that's happened. And understanding the whole galaxy is watching us and our expansion of consciousness. Because we are at a point now where we can actually manifest whatever we put our mind to it. And I'm also talking about making something ourselves instead of, let's say, needing a car to go from one place to another. 2012, we may be at a point where we just close our eyes and boom, we're there. And who's to say that we can't?
This is true.
Well, so, if you take a look at, you know, all these predictions of these things around us happening, I think that is part of the expansion of a polarity consciousness that is not giving recognition to the quantum view, which is they both exist at the same time in the same place. And this is proven by our physics. You know, it's crazy. And what's crazy, I think, is trying to understand all these predictions, you know, that have been made about 2012 and what can and will happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going back to the 70s. I was doing lectures, and I picked up a book by Jeffrey Gudovitch, We Are the Earthquake Generation, which he compiled a lot of the predictions of the end times and California going under, New York going under in 1999, according to Casey and so forth. All these things were written, but they never really happened.
Hmm. It doesn't mean that they won't happen at some point.
Well,
they could have just been off in their timing.
Yeah, it could be. Or maybe there was some kind of an intervention.
Oh, that's a nice way of thing to think of. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what we need now, and we will have. But I think something happened in the 70s, and what it may have done is that it may have shifted time. And a lot of these predictions were good up until that point. But for some reason, they start falling off. And I see now they really fall off completely. But they're being replaced now by new ones. Not by old ones, but we are living in some interesting times with weather patterns because of the magnetics of the Earth. That's going through havoc right now. But it's not something you can follow.
I think what interested me, and I was reading something else. I forget what it is. I've been reading so many different things to prepare for these shows. Kind of gelled together. But I think what jogged my memory was when I was reading something. Toth came to mind, and
yep.
The Hoffa Memente, but. But there was also the when we were talking about the grid pattern, the grid lines.
Yeah.
We were talking about the how the Earth is set in these particular energy grids, and it toggled my memory to think about what Toth was talking about in the Halls of Amenti, and where these people were, where these lords were, excuse me, where these gods, if you will. Or the ascended masters or whatever they are, were there and were just waiting. And he was one of the few people that could go to them, all right? Or the only one who could go to them. He knew where they were. He knew where the halls were, but he could also speak to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he got his wisdom from there, and he could take it back to us. He was kind of communicating between the gods and this. And it started to make me think because it started making me compare.
Well,
all,
Hermes
all
was
of the
messenger of the gods.
No, it started making me compare all of the myths, and they all
yes.
had like the Council of Nine, you know,
right?
And all of these different numbers, but all of these different hierarchies, these different councils, these different members. And as I looked into that, as I researched some of this Council of Nine, I saw that it began or one of the beginnings of the Council of Nine was the Greek gods, nine Greek gods that got together to punish Prometheus, right,
mm-hmm.
for his giving light and giving fire to mankind, and they formed this Council of Nine. Which caused mankind a great deal of problems, you know, ever after, right? And then there are other Council of Nines, and of course, it's almost become it's almost profane, because there is one point where it was a great it was a brotherhood, if you will, or a council to aid man, and then it became, and then it, over the different myths and different cultures, it became a council to confuse man, you know,
mm-hmm.
or to punish him, or to
so what is
to
it?
Keep him from rising. You know,
so which is it, do you think?
I don't know, because I've seen it in two different areas. I think that everything that is profane, I think you have the sacred and the profane, you know, and as above, so below. And I think what happens is that as you, there are powers in the universe, and I don't think we can deny this. There are powers in the universe that are trying that are trying desperately to keep mankind within their restraint, within their control. And there are other powers that these ascended masters and these great beings that are there to aid mankind and bring him and try to lift him from this and break away from these spirits that are these entities, if you will, or powers that are keeping us imprisoned within our own
they're keeping you imprisoned in the power that they hold.
That's right.
You know, Leo, we talked about nine,
right.
The numbers from 1 to 9,
right?
And how they all represent a different state of action or understanding.
Right.
Now, in your members of nine, as you talk, I mean, you can expect, let's say, number 7, you know, to go to dinner with number 2, because it just won't happen. So, understanding that, you know, the council has a responsibility, you know, to teach or to give on their level only, and their level is just as valid as the one above them or the one below them, because they all represent an understanding or the power. But the power for us, in a sense, we have to look at it from a linear perspective, so we have to break it down and put it into an understanding. And that's where the numbers come in, and part of this is the mysticism of understanding the four or the nine states, or the nine lords, or whatever you want to identify them to. Am I making any sense?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Yeah, you know, in understanding the mysticisms, there's so much from the past, but they're telling the same old story. Same thing with Thor, as you know, his contribution to us has been reading and writing, but also medicine too. So it's really, he is just giving us or showing us what we already know. But what we have to do is come out of this physical state of existence and evolve to the next state, which is not so restrictive in this physical matter, in a sense. You know, this is only a small part of the experience that we have as being sentinel beings, having this type of experience. Part of what's happening right now, I said before, that the whole galaxy is watching how we evolve and how what we do with this, with this information and with this knowledge. Part of this knowledge we're receiving because we have so much energy around us now. It's because of the physics within our solar system. We've talked before about the Schumann resonance. Normally there's a frequency or there's an energy field around us. It's up to about 12 right now, 12 hertz, from its 7.8 standing for years and years. We are being affected by this energy. A part of that is experiencing DNA and what's happening with these kids that are being born, these indigo kids. They have more properties within their DNA being activated, more codexes, more programs. So they have more going on in them than we have. So these are just part of the things that they're watching and what we do with this, where we take this. And 2012 is a point where we could say, all right, let's bring to a close everything that we've understood in, let's say, the last 15,000 years. And let's go forward into a new horizon and not restricted by the duality of this physical world, of this physical dimension.
Right.
Leave that behind us.
Is that what we should be looking toward, though, George? I think I've been trying to visualize that whole concept, and it's very difficult because it takes an entirely new mindset, you know.
Well, you gotta look inside, Leo, not outside, to see to experience this change. What is there to judge in the outside that you could see that would give you acknowledgement, let's say, for what you're looking for? What you got to look at is look at what's going on in your life, how you think about this and how you think about that, or how you don't think about it and just let it happen. Things are, you're experiencing, we all are experiencing like synchronicities in things that started years ago, but now they're speeding up and it's starting to make sense. Oh, no, I can understand why this happened or that happened, or why Aunt Faith is, over and whatever. I'm just saying that there are things happening right now, and what I said about time is not speeding up. The options that we have at the moment are tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what makes it supersedes time. And part of that is part of the physics that we're experiencing right now with these light particles, these time particles, and traveling. And, we've been using some of this technology for years, scalar wave technology, for weapons and, for harmful purposes.
Yeah.
But there's the other side of it, too.
One wonders if we'll pay cosmically for the misuse of the knowledge that we've received.
Well, yeah, or acknowledge it and don't do it no more, or do it differently. That's not harmful. It's like microwave ovens, simpler. A microwave, everybody uses microwave for cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Understand the principles behind it. What you do is you scatter the molecules, and they're going crazy in there. And anything they touch, the polarity of the cell itself switches back and forth, and that's what gives it the heat. But we could produce now a microwave that would scatter these molecules, but into a pattern that is beneficial to the food, not harmful to the food, and also heat it up. But we won't do that because. For some reason, they just can't. They won't make the microchips.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it's like building a car that you don't have to put gas into it. You just put water into it, and they go. I mean, we have this stuff, I'm sure, it just hasn't been exposed. But
it would give us too much freedom. We wouldn't be enslaved to the big corporations.
Well, maybe what you got to do is break away from the attachments to the plantation owner, and I think that is a trick to surviving right now. We got to break all these unnecessary ties. I can get into credit cards and how you handle your finances and how you live your life. But I think what we got to do is take a second look at why we do things, and if it's needed, we do it. If not, then set it aside. We become complacent after a while, and I have to say I'm guilty of this myself. I get so used to having this and that and so forth. But hey, do I really need this, or, you know, is it worth it, or why, you know, why do I get caught into these habits that started a long time ago and I haven't really given a second thought?
Yeah, you've been doing them for so long, you don't think much about it.
Yeah, well.
It becomes automatic. You don't even think of it. That's what it
happens. Well, if nothing else, I feel good about, I think, experiencing that now because, you know, I take a second look at things and I ask myself, you know, what the hell is this? It's like a dream, but this is a daytime dream that I can actually ask myself and get an answer to it.
Yeah, no, I think that what I see coming, what I'm hoping will happen, is that the light bulb will come on, you know, and the clouds will clear
for us.
For us, and we'll just be able to rise to that occasion. You know, for some reason, I don't think it's something that we will have to think about. Because I think our consciousness will, like you said,
I think we'll be plugged in.
We'll be plugged in. Yeah, it's like it's like going digital. You know, you know what I mean. Everybody will eventually be digitalized as opposed to analog. You know, and
that's a heck of a way to put it. Yeah.
You know, we won't be worrying about setting up our antennas outdoors. It'll come automatically. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And on our rooftops and stuff. I mean, everything will be there, and eventually, by 2012, we won't even need this stuff. I mean, we won't even need it.
We have antennas.
I mean, we can group think. We can do things that
you're going to have what you want instead of what you have to have or what you're supposed to have, whatever you feel comfortable with.
But you see, I believe that all of this technology that we continue to develop and that continues to be developed is simply it's simply something that's being censored and given to us developmental toys, exactly, and developing us, but at the same time more like a breadcrumb, you know, a breadcrumb trail, all right, where we pick it up and we eat the breadcrumb and we drop crumbs. And we're continually going, but it's like these companies and these businesses and develop these things like computers, telephones, faxes, you know, total mechanization of industry. These things are all things that come from the human mind and the human imagination.
But at the same time,
somebody. The people who create these things then try to sell it to us, and you know and become wealthy, all right? But the thing is that it's such a limited process. It's such a limited way of doing things because they have to be able to squeeze out the competition, which is everybody. And make everybody believe that they don't have the ability to do this themselves, when in reality, they do. All right, we're all psychic born. We all have abilities way far beyond what we know. And
so what does it have to do with you, Leo?
What do you mean?
Well, you talk about how these people can affect people.
Yeah.
Well, do they affect you? I mean, is it?
Yes, they do in many ways, but what I'm trying to...
But in what way do they affect you?
No, but what I'm trying to say is that they do if you don't know how they're doing it, if you
mm-hmm.
don't know that they're even doing it. You know, if you don't know that somebody's manipulating you, then, you know, you're living naively, you're living without knowledge of that. But as soon as you understand that there are people, there are powers manipulating your life or your destiny or whatever it may be,
mm-hmm.
for a specific cause, all right, for a specific purpose, right? For instance, if the Anunnaki had actually genetically manipulated the human being to become an automaton type of robotic workhorse.
That's
for
what they were looking for.
All right. Then, and what they did is they were in their final experiments, or in the Atlantean experiment anyway, what they did is they separated man from himself, okay, and they brought him down to what they've called the naked intelligence, or intellectual nakedness, where we no longer are spiritualized, we no longer have that connection to the other world, okay, or to the universe. We only have that connection to ourselves and to the earth, right? So we limit our focus, we limit our imaginations, we limit our ability to visualize, okay, only to a third dimensional reality. Where and what they did is they manipulated that gene, all right, took it out of our system and created this what we are. However, the human being being what it is, being an adapting and continually evolving creation, it's now at a point where I believe that it's at that point where it's regenerated itself and is now finding its ability to connect to the universe. Okay, and you're seeing that around the world, connecting you're getting a much greater worldwide, through the net and through, of course, television, but through the internet and through other ways, but also through meditations and groups and print and everything. We're learning how the world thinks. We're learning how others think, and connecting to those to the root race, if you will, than that we are. I mean, I think what are we in the sixth race? Sixth root race.
Fifth root. Fifth.
Is it the fifth?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Leo, you know, the question that I have here is that how can you stop this, or, you know, bring to an end this injustice? And it's the only thing that I can come back with, I think, in my own feeling, is that you don't give it the energy. You don't give it the thought.
That's right.
You don't give it what it needs to for food. And by you just connecting with it or being aware of it, just gives that much more power.
No. I don't mean that aspect of it. I mean the positive aspects of it. You know, the learning that you gain, the friendships that you gain, the awareness that you
all right
from broadening your scope. I mean, instead of living in a house or in a cave, you know, you're now broadening your scope to other areas, other places.
Well, and, no, you see, no, by giving it. By feeding into it, I mean, you just add to it. You add to the servitude of whatever proper that you're focused in on.
But I think
I'm saying.
It's very easy. If you remain reclusive, you stay within the walls of your house, okay,
or the walls of your own reality.
Or the walls of your own reality.
Of how
okay.
To build it.
Right. Then you become not only biased and narrow-minded and myopic.
You also live in denial.
You live in denial of what else is going on, and I.
Well, that's basically what this country does.
Yes.
As a people, we live in denial. We deny what. Is happening in a lot of the world to maintain
right.
our own happiness.
Yeah, exactly. To
and
maintain
I,
our own happiness.
And I
right.
think that's wrong.
True. And that's a very selfish state, if you think about it. It's a very selfish.
Well, it is a selfish state, but I'd rather be selfish than hurt upon. You know, an example that I can use, I think, with news, Leo, the news of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm forever watching what the hell is going on in the world, but I have to say that I don't buy Fox 100%, that's for sure. Fox News or anybody associated with its news department, I think it's ridiculous. But here again, this is my own view. You know, other people like it. I just don't care for it.
But
you know,
during these times now, okay, you're going to find groups like Fox, but other groups too. I mean,
NBC,
yeah. CBS, ABC.
They all have
CNN,
their own contrived view.
And they all have their agendas. Okay, and primarily their agendas are one and the same, which is to manipulate the minds of the people that they're, you know, and sell product, you know, or sell war. And these are, because you got to remember, General Electric is the probably the largest. It is the war machine. It's the largest weapons manufacturer in the world. You know, you don't think they just do the Today Show, you know, but everything is geared that way. You look at CNN, same thing. They're selling the war. They're selling. Their job is to create the panic, create the panic, right?
Leo, I'm not talking about CNN.
You know, they're not selling cars. Oh, go out and buy your new car. Go out
and get
your new dollar.
We get the
they're
point.
Creating the panic they created, and we have above that. But the problem is that most people really aren't above that. All right. Most people are.
How do you raise above that? What do you mean?
Above it is being able to be. You have to
make the effort
to be objective. Make the effort to look at multitudes of sources of information, and at the same time, rely on your gut instinct. Rely on that gut instinct. If somebody's lying to you, if you're being deceived, this is saying, this isn't right. How could this possibly be?
Leo, they all tell the same story, my friend, but they have different flavoring to it.
Well, they do.
What I was saying with Fox News is that I personally do not watch anything to do any news show produced by Fox, and you know it's just.
Do you know George, that Fox and NBC are basically the same company. They're doing the same. they're owned by the same guys. Okay,
yeah.
they're sold out. And
I just said that, Leo. But what I'm saying,
Fox. It writes most of the hit comedy series and drama series. Most of them on all the different stations are all written by Fox employed writers. Okay?
I know.
And Fox Entertainment has some of the best shows on television. Okay, like 24 and others. It's good stuff.
You're right, Leo. You're right. I can't say that.
And all they do basically is this, George. You know, they are responsible for the Hegelian divide, if you will. The keep them separated. You know, keep them fighting with each other. You got. Right, and you know what I love? Fox News, MSNBC feud. Okay, you got everybody on NBC. Or MSNBC, which is owned by NBC, is insulting all the guys on Fox News, okay, and vice versa, all right, and the same people. It's hysterical, but what it does is it keeps the feud going, you know, and it keeps the liberals watching.
That's right. You keep the feud going. Go ahead.
Well, in all this, you get a voice of truth that reminds us of what we owe each other.
Where is that?
In the world. Well, once in a while you get someone like Buchanan, who spoke out on the massacre of the Palestinians.
It was a
genocide and
but he was a speechwriter for Richard Nixon. So you gotta remember how well he writes. All right? But I like Pat Buchanan as well. But only in the sense that I enjoy listening to him or watching and reading his stuff. But but he's part of the mainstream. He manipulates the minds and somebody has to take the debating side. Somebody has to take the opposite side.
Leo, there is an alternative.
Huh?
There is an alternative than taking the opposite side.
What's that?
Shut the damn thing off.
Oh no, I understand. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get Anthony here on the line. You want to talk to Anthony?
Yeah, hi Anthony. But I want to finish on this, Leo, because I was just bringing a point here in control. Now, I personally just don't like Fox News, so I purposely will not watch Fox News. Now, what you're saying is right. The same old shit is on another station anyways, and it's the same writers and blah, blah, blah. But you see, I don't want to be involved with Fox because I don't want to feed it, and it's not worth it. So I just shut it right out. So I want to know the news. I can go to 101 different sources which are telling the same thing, but it's not Fox News. So I personally, this is the control that I have in my life, and my life dealing with all this bullshit that's going on in the world, I just restrict myself to a few, and that's it. I don't have time for this other shit. So, you know, it's a matter of I have control over that. And
Fox has kicked them off.
Yeah, we wonder what you saw in Fox that made you so angry.
I'm just using this. That this is the power or the focus that I have, and it's not that I have to follow the rest of the crowd. They want to do what they do, and they do. I don't care. This is my way in dealing with reality.
But George, what you're doing is you're falling right into that whole paradigm. You're falling into that good guy, bad.
You're right, Leo. You're right. And I brought it up. I think to a point that. There's a lot of things now out there that I view or I look at that are really not important. And, you know, even with materials in reviewing these books and so forth, you know, I just don't have time for it, and I have to focus and give myself so much time, and that's it. Because
George, you have to understand that it is a distraction. Television is a distraction, but it's a distraction that keeps us in line. All right?
Exactly.
It keeps
us
fighting amongst each other. It keeps us. I can't tell you. Ever since I've had this radio show where we do political stuff for the last 6 years, people approach me on the street and want to argue, or they think they've got the answer, and they say, "Oh, did you hear about this one? Did you hear about that one? Did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? What do you think of that? I don't agree with you on this," and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, because I've read the stuff that they're talking about. I know that 99% of what they're coming from is from the mainstream media, right? But, I mean, this guy I know, he watches CNN like a retired guy, 25,
like
24
religion.
Hours. It's like his religion.
Yeah.
They watch the Meet the Press, and they watch all the goofy gurus of the mainstream media news, all right, trying to... promote lies and deceit. Okay, crock of crap. You know, and it's like the guy who made me the most angry and the guy who's the most beloved of all newsmen is he passed away. Is Tim Russert?
Yeah.
Tim Russert was a master manipulator. He was.
you had to give him a good mark for being that.
Well, you got to give anybody a good mark for being good at what they do. But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, I couldn't watch Meet the Press. I thought it was a piece of crap, okay, because it was a propaganda machine, all right? This guy was a propagandist, okay? All of the people on there were propagandists. He came on like he was hitting them hard with hard questions and blah, 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 blah. But don't tell me for one freaking minute that these people that come on Meet the Press aren't prepared, and he didn't send those questions to them to begin with.
Leo, you take this stuff too personal.
No, but you know what used to piss Tim Russert off the most?
What's that?
Was he when people would come to his on his show unprepared, after he prepared the program, sent them the questions he was going to ask. And then they come to his show and they're unprepared. Now, what that means and what that tells you is that he was, this show is all propaganda crap, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, he prepares. There's no sudden death moments or unknown. I mean, these guys all knew what they had to say. They all knew what they were going to say before they said it.
Yeah.
And there was no surprises there, all right? And he had some of the slimiest, most miserable politicians on there. Right, you had Joe Lieberman and John Kerry and Chris Dodd and all of these hacks, all of these criminals. All right,
it sounds like fun.
he made every one of them look good. So it's like, you know, that's the kind of media that you have with NBC and CBS and ABC.
I know.
And all Fox News and everybody else. All right.
Yeah.
Fox News makes everybody look good who they want to look good, and everybody bad who they want to look bad.
Well, you know, Leo.
Leo.
Yeah. Oh, hey.
Oh, well, Anthony, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing
fine.
Wonderfully. No, no worries to be sorry. I really was just listening in tonight. I wanted to wish you all a happy new moment and a happy new life and a happy new breath.
God bless you. Thank you. There's a full moon out there tonight, too.
Oh.
Oh, the Gemini moon.
There you go.
Yeah, the first Gemini moon of 2009 on the ninth day. What about synchronistic moments?
What degree is that, do you know?
Why is it called the Gemini moon?
Anthony, you know the degree of the moon?
No, sir.
Okay, so...
Do you know why it's called the Gemini moon?
No.
Why is that?
I don't know.
You named it the Gemini moon. Why is it called that?
It's because it's what I read. Yeah, it's in January and June, and
there you go.
It's a pattern.
go ahead.
I was just listening last. You know, I listened to your show. I love you all so much, and I appreciate you so much. I listened to your show last week, Lila and George and Leo, about 3-4 times while I'm at work setting up my surgery and whatnot. And Lila, you mentioned this week that you wanted to talk about being present in the moment, and I was wondering if that was the focus of the conversation tonight.
Well, actually, we got more into talking about
2012.
Leo wanted to talk about that, and hopefully next week we'll talk about being present in the moment, because I think that's really important.
But this has a lot to do with it, because I think with 2012, what will happen is
maybe
that's where we will be. In the present, in the moment, that we won't have, I mean, because time and space end, so there will no longer be a relevance to our history, no longer to our future. It will be present. Everything will be present. And
but
the
present is going to be much different than what the present would be now. So it's hard to, let's say, manufacture or imagine, you know, what that is or where you're going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it is difficult to speculate about that.
I have a question for George.
Yeah, go ahead.
George, we're in the sixth day now, and you know, for the last almost 2 years, I guess it has it been 2 years or a year or so, you've been talking about it, and we're now in the sixth day. How is our present moment affected in now that we're in the sixth day?
I think it's bringing to a head the fifth day, the good and the bad. But it's from the ashes that came from that.
Can I give you an example just very quickly? It's just I don't mean to interrupt you, because we're in it now. You know, it's as if the experiential reality from my life has just gone through a time warp. And for example, you know, this morning, you know, I got awoken from a very blissful 2-hour rest, and called into do one appendectomy, then two appendectomies, and three. You know, they say things come in threes. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it's as if the synchronistic likelihood of a lot of these events are just impossible. So there is something that is real. Coincidence is no longer. And like on the third. Case, one of the nurses bumped the back of her head on the corner of the stereo, very sharp. And then the very following case, the next nurse, not knowing that the other nurse bumped her head, bumped her forehead right where the mark of the the third eye is and cut it just to the point where it was bleeding. And I said to myself, there's, you know, of course there was compassion, and I love, you know, I had compassion and whatnot for them, but if the value that was created out of it was, is if I had taken the action from the time the first nurse bumped her head to the time that her second nurse bumped her head, if I had taken the action to make that correction, then the second nurse wouldn't have suffered. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lesson in every breathing moment, and it seems to be as if things are moving in a time warp fashion. That's all
so
I can say.
So did you move the equipment?
No. Of course, we fixed it after the second nurse bumped her head, of course. But, you know, just the likelihood, because no one ever bumps their head on that piece of equipment.
Now, when you said you fixed it, who fixed it? You fixed it and somebody else?
Well, after the second head bump, we fixed it.
Now, who is we?
The surgical
team you were with?
Yeah. You know, we just put a little piece of padding on the corner and prevent, you know, it was a safety issue. But my point is, George, that I've been in this OR, this particular OR, for 3 years, and no one's ever bumped their head. And then
Anthony, slow down for a minute now. Let's go back now. What happened, when it happened, who was involved with it? What you were saying, the synchronicity is astronomical on this. There's a reason for it. There's a reason that it caught your attention, but you're taking it personally. You should have done this or that and so forth. But it also caught other people's attention, and blood was spilled. So I'm just saying that, you know, in reality, my friend, that was a point of focus, not just for you, but for the other people involved, and also that equipment, whatever it was. So I'm saying, look right there at the situation and experience it for what it is without judging it or evaluating this or that, other than take it for the experience and understand that there's a reason for that happened. And, I mean, a real reason, because blood was drawn. So I'm saying it's within that you'll find the answer, or maybe the answer is for somebody else. But you are just,
you know,
part of the play that's going on here, and thank God that you're part of that. Okay, Anthony, that's all I could say on that.
No, and I appreciate that, because the value that was created from it was not only, of course, the people learned. Well, I learned first and foremost in the future that to take action. Whenever I see a wrong, take action. Don't hesitate, mm-hmm. because I hesitated. And of course, things are as they should be, and they learn. But each one of those individuals are extremely hard-headed. So, because as I mentioned earlier, that was our third appendectomy, and the very first nurse that bumped her head came into the situation, I didn't mention to you, as a relief nurse, and we were already into the flow of surgery, and she came in, you know, telling us what to do, and we already had, this was our third appendectomy. So her head was very much so, she was a very headstrong lady. So, and the other nurse that bumped her head, there's past karmic situations where, you know, I love people. Don't get me wrong. Yes, I'm listening.
Anthony, instead of sitting back and trying to justify anything and everything, you cannot do that, my friend, because what you're doing is that you're actually closing off the reality and coloring it with your own flavoring, and that's that what you're doing is you're building on that. I'm just saying you can spend time with it other than let it go, and it will present itself. What you said before, things happen in threes, without a doubt. So from this, you know, more will come. More will come from it. Don't take it personally. Sit back and experience it, not directly or let it flow in any way.
Okay, I have one other experience, and this is very real. A young 2 weeks ago, I was on my way home, and there was a car accident. And there were no emergency responders, so I had to stop. You know, normally I'll flow past the car accident and won't get out.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I had mentioned this to you last week or not, but I got out, and as I approached the scene, there was a young lady on the telephone, and I was still in my scrubs. They said, oh, my goodness, thank goodness someone in their scrubs is showing up. Yeah. I looked, I asked her what's going on, and she pointed, and I looked on the ground, and there was a guy on the ground who someone had just recently grabbed their head, and I was about to go down and do the assessment, and the guy looked up at me and said, don't touch him. I'm a doctor. So I've really had a huge burden relieved off my shoulder in the moment, but at the same time I had an immense sense of compassion for the person whose head he was cradling, because he began at that point to bleed a lot onto the street. So there was another man in the same instant had started taking this man's pulse.
Yes.
So both of these people were doctors in this moment of this young man's, I guess he's, later on I found out he's not such a young man, but the lady who saw me approaching was also an emergency medical nurse. So I turned to her and I asked her, I didn't know she was an emergency medical nurse. She told me, I'm a nurse, and I saw him, I stopped when I saw him going up into the air, and he's just been hit by a car.
Yeah.
So I kind of looked back down at the guy, and, you know, we were all trying to make sense of the situation. And bottom line is about 10 minutes went past, and still no emergency responder showed up. This is about 2 weeks ago. The man's name, by the way, is Glenn Hodges. So if there's people out there who understand intention and prayer, please pray for Glenn Hodges, because he's still fighting for his life because he's in a drug-induced coma.
Well,
so,
I hope that... People do that, and I think this is a discussion that maybe we can continue on with next week. We've come to the end of our show, and unfortunately, we have to close and move on.
Oh, the lady that hit him came up onto the scene, and she fainted. Just 2 days ago, I found out that that lady, 10 days earlier, had told Glenn not to cross the street, or someone is going to hit you. And
wow.
She was the one that ended up hitting him. That's why I just had to let you know the synchronistic realities that are unfolding. So please pray for her, for Glenn to get better, so she knows that there's no accountability. It's not her fault.
Oh, of course it's not her fault. And
I'll pray for him.
That's the thing that we certainly will all do. But we want to thank you, Anthony, for joining
thanks,
us.
Anthony.
And we want to thank you, George, for calling, and I hope everyone has a peaceful weekend. And I think we should all take a moment in over the weekend and think about peace, because there's so much going on in the world.
Better yet, live it.
Well, I enjoy your weekend, George, and everyone out there, and talk to you soon.
All right. God be with you. Thank you.
Okay.
Good night, Anthony.
Good night,
Anthony.
Good night. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.